Had positive feedback about, they in fact embraced that, and that will take effect July 1st, beginning of the new fiscal year. If you go into the rail system and there's a disruption or something happens and you need to exit, you know, it's something that you can do now without being charged. And I have to say that the RAP was a really big part of that, public comment. Also, I went out, this was 18 months ago, to Alexandria with Blue Line riders at a time when Blue Line riders were really feeling the pinch, and they remember this, of transition to Silver Line, and it was a very significant issue that came out of that. So this was really a very grassroots suggestion to our finance group that, you know, that we consider this, and I think that it's great that the general manager and the board embrace it, but when that gets implemented, you all will be asked whether you think it's working or not, how it's working, is 15 minutes the right amount of time, you know, we'll revisit that a little bit once we have some actual experience with it. The Metro Select Pass, so this showed up initially as something called Name Your Own Pass product, and we launched it as a pilot. It's the Metro Select Pass that started in April. It's already selling better than the 28-day pass, so we're optimistic about its prospects. Something that, again, customers said to us, we need something with more flexibility in the pass, something that offers this discount with volume travel. So, as you know, our fare structure is a little complicated. I'm sometimes known for being hyperbolic, but I really like being understated. So a little complicated is my attempt at the end. So, Metro Select Pass is not the easiest pass product to understand, but I think our customers are getting it because they're coming to it fairly quickly. It's been interesting. The biggest single driver of people subscribing to the pass is word of mouth. So when we're out in stations and we're handing out take-one cards, that seems to be the thing that most frequently drives people to get the pass. And I will also tell you that the rate of people putting it on their auto reload on their smart trip card is very, very high, around 75-80%. Other people are electing to, you know, sort of set it, forget it, if you will. And so I think that early acceptance is positive, and we'll come back to customers and ask more about that as we go along. And then off-bus cash fare loading. So this is checked off because you all gave us feedback about it. But you prevailed, as customers told us as part of the public outreach, that taking cash off the bus right now without a point of sale where it would make it easier for customers to reload their smart trip card was not a good idea. So the board did not proceed with this. So just in terms of seeing the results of your actions, you know, because this wasn't a year when we proposed to there wasn't a huge turnout at public meetings, but there was a very vocal turnout through many channels, and this was the number one issue because we don't take this away from us, the ability to load cash onto our card. So GM, the board takes the event, did not proceed with that. So that was done. And then Blue Line fare reductions. This is something that's come up a couple of different times. I'm not sure what the current status is with the RAC in terms of any specific recommendations or proposals that you may have about that. But we can come back to that because I think that when I get into the suggestions going forward and the general manager's priorities, you might see that that wouldn't be timely right now. I think it might be a better time to visit that issue.
I was going to kick off the questions on this page, on this section.
Sure.
One of the things that came up when we made our proposals late last year on the budget, when we suggested the thing turned out to be maybe 15 grade period, we had, and then also the fare, which was widely. We also recommended that WMATA establish policy on refunds. And we weren't saying give everybody a refund if things are late. We weren't saying anything specific. Our recommendation was that there be a policy developed to say what are the conditions that we will or won't. And I know I've heard it's a case-by-case basis, so we're just trying to say we have some large categories of things. And we aren't sure You know, the board heard us, and they said they thought they passed, but we don't really know if that was considered or not considered, or if it's something in the works, because it isn't necessarily something customers would see. It would be, it's kind of behind the scenes in what the call center and other people do.
Right, so what I would say about that is that I believe that, that you're right, that the board understood your recommendation, and the staff did provide some factual information, some data about what the impacts could be on a range, depending on how you created that policy and how it will be implemented. But then I think what happened is that in the context of 2015, the leadership transition, both in terms of board transition and general manager transition, we didn't get a lot of formal consideration. You know, I don't think it got a lot of deliberation on the part of anybody. So I would suggest that, and this is one of those things where you are, you're an entity that interacts directly with the board. Your recommendations go directly to the board, not really through staff, okay? But if it were my recommendation, it would be that you revisit that for the FY18 budget. And here's why. Any refund policy is going to have a cost associated with it. And so the board would need to act on something like that, both because it's a policy matter and it's a fiscal matter. So you probably want to develop that more, that recommendation more, with respect to what you propose the board consider for FY18. Now, that's very timely because having just completed 17, the numbers get crunched over the summer and then the process begins again in the fall for the next fiscal year. So the staff start making presentations at the board meeting about what might be considered and what some of the range of implications are in the fall. So that would give you a few months to refine your recommendations, refresh them with some of the new around members that you have now, and determine what, if any, specific recommendations you would want to make going forward, and have that be part of the dialogue for the coming fiscal year.
Yeah, and we weren't, like, we weren't spelling out what it should be because we felt that we could spend months arguing about that. And so it was more just to have policy for consistency and not necessarily have a cost associated. Carlos, we'll take it here for chance.
Can you share with us the analysis that you developed on the impact of refund policies?
I'm sure we could. I think it came from our finance group, so it's not something I have, but I can research it and see what we can find.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be helpful. Your recommendation is that we kind of consider further and research what a reasonable policy would be, and any information on its impact would certainly be helpful.
Yeah, we can take that to Mark and consider.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's, as you can appreciate, there's a lot of complexity. So at what point, you know, I think that the original, if I recall correctly, the original recommendation was something about added trains were accessible. They like, well, define that, right? So it's more than 10 minutes, it's 20 minutes, it's 30 minutes. Is that for some riders a daily occurrence? Is it an endpoint? You know, there's a lot of variation. So the range is pretty big.
How do you find out on a case-by-case basis?
So it really does range, depending on the severity of the impact of the disruption. So it could be severe because of the delay time. You know, trains are getting people from their origin to their destination with an hour delay because there's been, you know, really a standstill someplace. If there's been a massive delay, in other words, if the entire red line is delayed. So it really does depend, but it's very exception-based. So we tend to look at not what you would consider a routine delay or a routine service disruption that maybe has a limited impact, but it has to be a significant magnitude. Or extraordinary circumstances. And, you know,
so can you use an example of what those circumstances would be that, you know, would allow you to say to your customer service personnel, if someone calls in and requests a refund for this incident, go ahead and grant it?
Right, so I think the general manager very recently has made public that we didn't charge reopening gates around certain service disruptions that happened in the last few months. So we sometimes do things at that level, where we basically say, you know, well, we weren't able to offer service, And so everybody going through gates in these five stations, we open the gates if in fact somebody calls and said, hey, I went through half an hour before you started it. We gave them credit on their smart card. That would be an example.
Another couple of comments. You mentioned through the select path, and it's actually something we'll be talking about later tonight, is answering questions from our own membership, what they might have, to elaborate on the presentation that Sean gave to the budget committee recently. Because our objectives were not only to provide input on the budget, but to participate in that way after the fact, as you mentioned, on the grades period, also on the select path. Probably not the off bus because we aren't. And then the last comment I have is on the blue line, that the fare reductions were not our primary objective on the blue line. That was barring improved service. Yes. Yeah, thanks.
I understand. So if you want to go to the next slide, Jim. So then you had, I think we're 100% on the customer service side. So as I looked at the work plan, this is where, to your point, Barbara, you had blue line crowding as one of the issues that we did consider. You may recall last year this presentation made by staff to the board about changing some of the service on the blue line. It was called the rail optimization plan. Unfortunately, that did not advance because there was not enough understanding about all the implications of that. But the RAC was presented with the plan before it was presented publicly. Did agree that the plan should at least get a public hearing. So the RAC did have input, but it did suggest that it be advanced. It just unfortunately did not go beyond the board's consideration.
But we actually presented this again this February to the board, and Colin presented it, but it wasn't just restoring so many trips per hour. It was, here are options you can think of. We thought what we could. You may want to talk about those. But one of them, when I think about all of the options we suggested, the one that I know a lot of changes in schedule are very complicated, especially when we're looking at maintenance schedules and track work. But when you see routinely that the numbers were different from the other lines in terms of crowding, I'm wondering if just the 8-car change, you don't have to change the schedule for that. It's more just how many cars arrive when the blue is there. And that would make a significant difference. Wondering if that was quite as complicated. And if we're running short on rail cars, as we have been in the past, maybe that's a problem. But it seems to me that very naively, that you know, if there are any 8-car changes anywhere, if we're on the blue line, it would be a huge difference. Oh, and so you can comment on that.
I agree, more 8-car trains on the blue line would make a big difference.
Is that really difficult, though, still, to build into the schedule?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you read the general manager's customer accountability report, it's very candid about the challenges we have with respect to fleet reliability and getting enough the fleet out every day to meet the service that we have. So adding cars at this point would be an extraordinary challenge
for
us. Colin. I just want to follow up on that. I don't know if you've actually seen what we presented to the board executive committee because it wasn't kind of drafted on.
I think you got it at the time, but I don't know about it.
Yeah,
I'll send it to you.
In brief, in addition to, you know, our recommendation
on
switching a couple of trains per hour from, you know, towards the Silver to Blue, for example, or even, you know, turning back the Silver Line at a certain point in order to allow more Blue Line trains to go through. So I guess I'm curious to know whether there have been any ongoing conversations beyond the, you know, the rail optimization plan about how to address Blue Line overcrowding issue.
Not at this time. So, crowd control during emergencies, that's something, that and emergency drill participation is something that I've talked extensively about. And if you look at the customer accountability report, you will see that the general manager indicated that he wants to do more with respect to employees on platforms at key locations in order to manage this. And I think there's going to be more information available on that in the next few weeks. It's something that we're developing a pilot program on, and so we'd be happy to share with you that information as it comes forward, but very much took into consideration the customer feedback on that. And I don't know if Paul told you when he came to visit, one of his first experiences when he took the helm at Metro was to watch a service disruption at Union Station, and he saw two trains on the platform at the same time, and the lack of information that was available to customers with respect to having one station manager not able to talk to 2,000 people. And so that really informed his thinking about it and accelerated, I think, him taking the customer feedback on that and putting it as a high priority in the care plan.
Let me jump in with a question, Megan. No, with respect, well, why would you need a pilot to improve ground control? This is an incident that's going to happen. I mean, this is something that's easily implemented. You have an issue, you have crowds on the platform, you send staff to it. I don't understand why you're asking.
So there aren't staff standing by to do that. It requires us to create the positions and to create those roles, to train people to implement those roles. And to manage it. So it's a new program and it has new positions associated with it.
That's what I'm saying.
And the pilot is just, it gives us an opportunity to tweak it if it's not perfect. It allows us to see how it works, get customer feedback on it, make improvements to it before we make it a permanent program.
I understand that. It's just the word pilot means there's a possibility it might not work, so we're not going to do it. But I think this is essential.
Agreed. It's less the temporary nature of it than the how best to achieve it. So then the emergency drill participation, obviously we've increased our emergency drills. You know, Mr. Sheehan, his group participated, Obama personally participated, I'm sure many of you participated in the last drill.
Will seconded all of them.
Yeah. 100%. That's great. And we appreciate the feedback that you all give us as part of that. It's key, obviously. Police patrol surging in hotspots. So you've probably heard it on the news. You've probably heard the chief present it. I know Chief Gaddis came to talk about crime prevention recently, so I'm sure he presented it. But we, in fact, have additional patrols that use MetroSat to basically track where crimes are most prevalent on the system and at bus stops, and they staff police there at key hours accordingly.
Did you have a question on that, Bob?
Well, I have a series of questions. I'm just a little skeptical that maybe you shouldn't be checking some of these things until we know that they've actually been implemented and are successful. So improved crowd control during emergencies.
Right, that's why it's a pilot. It hasn't rolled out yet.
Well, I'm not sure that you should. I'm not sure that should be checked.
Oh, checked.
Yeah, there are things that I don't think should be checked yet.
So my check mark indicates that RAC input has been considered and the program is underway. Because RAC's role is to give us the feedback, to give the rider opinion, to give rider recommendations. It's not actually to implement the program. The staff actually do that. So the check means that the RAC portion is done.
Well, I'd like to suggest another metric.
Okay.
That these suggestions have been accepted and they've been implemented successfully.
Okay.
I don't suggest that we be in charge of implementing them. I'm just suggesting that we want to know that something has been done and done successfully and it's working, rather than just someone read something on a piece of paper and said, oh, that's what they think.
So on the customer accountability report, which is online, you can see with respect to the platform attendance program when it's being implemented, and then we update it monthly. So in that way, every rider can see as transparently as we can make it the start date of a program and how it's unfolding, and it's level of success as we move forward.
Well, let me give you a couple of other examples. Last year, we submitted to the board some suggestions on station management. And we've never received any information, feedback on that. After Chief Gaddis, or his assistant, was here, we made some suggestions.
Chief Gaddis.
We haven't gotten any feedback on that. I'm suggesting that going forward, anytime that we make a suggestion, that someone respond to us in writing as to where our suggestion was dealt with, and what we can expect from our suggestion. I won't be offended if the suggestion is rejected, but we want to be, at least I want to be able to gauge how effectively those suggestions were taken and what the plan is, the timeline for implementing them. So we could observe, because most of the things we do here and most of our concerns are based on our own observation.
Sure.
So that's my suggestion. Going forward, we need, because, you know, well, that's how I feel.
So you can appreciate that the grant offers is a body. And so as a body, suggestions you make to the board, we can help track and get you answers for. But we can't possibly respond to every suggestion every individual member makes. That's just not practical. But as a body, as you formally put forward suggestions, I think you're absolutely right. You're entitled to a response to the suggestion, whether the board considered the matter, whether the board acted on the matter, and whether staff were directed to implement the policy suggestion. That's a very reasonable position.
So is your suggestion that, I mean, a lot of these things were not done, were not made part of presentations to the board. They were not suggestions that were formally adopted by the RAC and put it in written form presented to the board.
Right, but I think what the staff has said is we feel like in order to be responsive to the RAC, we have a work plan, you put forward these initiatives to give input to staff, and so at least the staff, we want them to be responsive in terms of what we've heard and what we've seen going forward. But that's a little bit different still than taking every individual suggestion and process.
Well, I'm not suggesting you take every individual suggestion, but
one thing that the RAC might do that works well with AAC is we have robust discussion just like RAC does. But if we have a position that we want to move forward, it comes in the form of a motion, yeah, the second, and then it's more formal from the committee. That way you get a sense of the body, and I think that's where you're going with this. If the body says we want to move forward with this as a RAC position, so much more effective than if it's Pat Sheehan's position.
I'm looking forward. What's happened, at least during my tenure on there, is there are two things. One was that we could put something in writing and we would make a presentation to the board, and this is our recommendation in writing on a quarterly basis.
We can make recommendations at any time.
Second thing was, under Jason's time period, he instructed us to contact him if we had anything, any concerns that were outside, perhaps something, mostly in terms of questions. Mm-hmm. And we expected some, and you know, we would expect some feedback from that. I'm suggesting that we need to have a more formal process, very formal process.
So you're coming on that, Barbara, and if you have a question, share it.
Well, I think you're talking about the recommendations that we've given to the board for the most part, rather than questions to the staff. We are trying to get those answers from the board. We aren't asking you to tell us what the board decided. If you're directing our questions to them, what happened with this?
Yeah. But I'm also suggesting, what is the process now that Jason is gone? I'm sorry?
Sure.
I think that's not. People don't know that.
Oh.
Well, maybe on the same. Let's carry on. Yeah.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Hi, Sherry Bowser.
Sorry. Okay, I'm trying to clarify about your question. All right, so are we asking that things that we have suggested, when we were, let's say, like, just the presentation now, perhaps if there were different symbols, or maybe red, you know, green, yellow, whatever, it gives us an instant kind of gauge of where this particular or specific issue is. So if there's a, you know, green light beside it, then it has been 100% approved, effective, taken in, and if there's a yellow light, there's kind of decisions still being made, or, you know what I mean, if there's a red, it's just, we're just hearing it, or, you know what I mean, are you saying, like, when we see the report, should we have perhaps a chart or something like that, instead of simply checking it for our purposes internally, so we can kind of know that when we see the first option, that there is actually, it's been submitted and it's being validated somehow, or, you know what I mean? It's a gauge to right. how things are progressing, as opposed to whether or not the board is accepting. Oh my gosh, this means, sorry.
Yeah. I'm just going to respond because I think you're addressing the question to me. The board is free to monitor its own recommendations and track them and report on them to itself in any fashion it sees.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're talking about. That's what we need to do.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay. Mayor?
Internal.
Let's move on.
Yes, please.
I think the bylaws already tell us how to do this.
Okay.
We submit as a RAC all of our suggestions to the chairman. The chairman presents to the board.
Oh, sure, sure.
The board then supposed to communicate with the chairman and the chairman back to us. This isn't, there's no need to be civil or anything that a report should be done.
So, call center our operations, so this is in my portfolio, my area of responsibility, and one of the recommendations that came forward from the RAC was to consider extending the call center hours. So, it is something that I consider, and it's something that I have declined to do at this time. But let me explain why. We have looked very carefully at how we staff the call center. And what we do there is we actually, the call center staff created a computer program that allows them to match staffing levels with call so that we can maximize our effectiveness, minimize our overtime, and hit our targets for responsiveness to customers, okay? So we have targets that say that we want our calls answered in a certain amount of time, we want people to be on hold less than a certain amount of time, we want people to be satisfied with the response of the call that they make a certain amount. And they get surveyed. Many of you have ever called a call center. Sometimes you're randomly selected to participate in a survey, and that's how we track quality. So we have these metrics.
I'm sorry, we have two questions. Are they on this update? Okay, thank you.
So as part of that, we very carefully look at call volume, and we know that at different times we've tried different call scenarios for special events and holidays and things of this nature. And we know that when we push the hours down past the rush hour, we just don't get any volume. So as a practical matter, it's just not cost effective for us to stay open longer. But I will also say, again, as part of the customer accountability report that Mr. Riefeld has done, is that we are going to modernize our call center. So we're going to be able to be a full service contact center and engage customers through social media, through chat. People will be able to send us pictures and that kind of thing. So that's already happening on the web to some extent, but it's very limited way. We intercept people occasionally that come through online, and we see customers are having, a lot of customers are having a problem. We see that on Twitter. We sometimes try to impart information to a group. But on a one-to-one basis, we're in the contact center, really still limited to the phone. So that software change is being made this summer, and we've got a date on it for September to launch that, and we'd be happy to share more details as we go forward with that, and I think we'll make more presentation about it this summer. But for those reasons, it's probably a long answer to your very short question, but the call center hour operations are not really extended.
Yeah, I guess, so in terms of the hours of operation, they're pretty flexible in terms of when the hours are communicated, and also what's the frequency of these calls, like how many do you get per day, which days are the busiest or the least busy, and what do the data suggest about the trends that you see, what are the most sought-after questions or the questions that are most frequently asked.
Number one, where's my bus? Number one. One, two, and three, where's my bus? So most of the calls come from bus customers. Rail customers are, by and large, using electronic forms of communication to track their service. I can give you a much better breakdown, but what I would refer you to is Jeremy Franklin, the director of the call center, was here.
Yes, he had a presentation on that.
I would happily share that with you because that gives you a lot of the detail that you're probably looking for, and through the chair, I'm much joy to share that. The flexibility of the call center is pretty good. If we had blizzard, if we had snow, if we had unusual weather conditions, special events in our region, we change up days. We bring in people for extra hours or extra days, early morning, late night. We can hold over hotels if we think the weather's going to be bad, in order to make sure that we have people on the phones for an icy morning, because we know that we're going to need even more people saying, where's my bus on an icy morning? So we are able to surge staff, if you will, as we need to.
But are there your regular operating hours?
Yes.
And then those surge hours are on top of those regular
hours?
That's
right.
Okay.
Deborah?
Just on the call center hours, you were talking about holidays. On Columbus Day, Veterans Day, those of us that use the bus and have to use it to get to work, we don't mind that there's a reduced bus schedule and all of that. But in the Northern Virginia area where there's no trains at all, where the problem comes in is, I guess the concern is if you have a skeleton crew of buses, then maybe hopefully a skeleton crew of call center folks, because what happens, the bus line that I ride, most of us do not have smartphones, we don't have apps, we don't have any way of communicating other than with a phone. And the last note of Veterans Day, what was on the website, what was on the schedule for the holiday, and what the bus drivers have were all different. We were stranded. There was just tons of us stranded, and the buses were very full. And if the call center had been open, you could have said, you know, not so much where my bus is, which the schedule says it's operating today, the driver says it's not operating today, it changed, you know. So just, I think what the recommendation in that sense was, is just a skeleton crew to match the skeleton crew you have of buses, because we don't have any other way of, when we're stranded, saying, well, the schedule says the bus is coming, I've been here for 2 hours, no bus is coming, maybe there's no bus coming today. So that was kind of the concern there.
Okay, we'll take that and look at it harder for this sort of the major holidays, right? We're talking about minor holidays where the federal government may be closed, but businesses are open, and that's where the business is.
I mean, you should have to
responsiveness to our collective requests, which I think was what Bob was getting at in the past. And so, you know, whether it's, you know, recommendations to the board and kind of going into a black hole and or, you know, request for information from staff. So, just know that you are not solely being held responsible.
Thank you. I take the collective responsibility.
So that is moving forward to improve interaction with riders. I mean, it seems like, given the current state of affairs and the sort of, you know, decline in, I guess, you know, trust among riders and the agency, it seems like communication with riders is probably the easiest way to build goodwill. But kind of observing the agency's interactions online with riders, it should be a real lack of responsiveness. And so I guess I'm wondering, you know, what kind of reasonable expectations riders should be able to have for responsiveness on social media, for example, when they are asking for information about an incident or train schedules or any number of legitimate requests, mean comments aside.
Right. So I think that's exactly what we're trying to do with the call center, becoming a model call center, is having for the first time engage in social media, Facebook, Twitter, all of it, have people who would otherwise be phone reps, that are more tech savvy, who can get on there and answer any question. Where is my bus? Why did the machine take my departure card? Why was the station manager not forthcoming with information? Whatever it is, they'll be able to have those interactions. And you know, again, this will be something that we have to set reasonable expectations for, because I think we'll ramp up as we get more experience with it. But you know, my expectation is that we'll be as fully functioning as the calling channel is now for our customers. So that doesn't help the people who don't have a smartphone and are standing out on the sidewalk someplace. But for most folks, for more than 95%, they have access either to a desktop or a smartphone at some point in the day. They will be able to engage in that fashion. And then for others, hopefully the phone is the option, and hopefully we're available when they need us. And we have to look hard to make sure that's the case.
Question for Chris?
Thank you for being here. I have kind of two questions back to back. I understand their plans. I understand there's no money. I think the board chair has made that very clear that there's no money. So my question is about right now. How many Lamada employees are responsible for social media interaction right now?
One at a time. It's not 24/7 the same person.
But how many people?
But typically it's one.
You have a person assigned.
There's always somebody that's monitoring.
Yeah,
the person is getting passenger information.
Sure.
But it rotates.
Mm-hmm. But how many total employees does that account for? Are you saying that it's 24/7, so there's three people a day?
No, not necessarily. We try to monitor during the rush hours, obviously, and during any time when we're having a service disruption.
Okay, I want to piggyback on that. Mm-hmm. We understand work has to be done. Today, work has been done on the red line that was supposed to end at 3 p.m. And like many other days since that work has started, this urgent surge, it did not end at 3 p.m. Riders were on Twitter yelling and screaming, what's going on? Why is my train sitting here for 17 minutes? The Twitter account, which you say is manned by one person, had not tweeted in 4 hours. So the maintenance continued past the advisory time by 50 minutes today. Riders were asking questions. No one was responding. I'm thankful that you have struggled. Or not thankful. I'm aware that you have struggles with where you're going to go with call center, and I see you have a position open for another social media person. I think that's great. You're not responding to riders right now. So this is 3 o'clock, and that's when peak fares start. For 50 minutes, people paid peak fares and sat on a train for 17 minutes or however long and got no communication from your Twitter account. And that's my problem today, is that the resources you have right now are not being responsive to riders.
Well, I appreciate that. And obviously, I have to look back and see what happened in that particular instance. I was hopeful that we at least put out Metro alerts in that regard.
You didn't.
That did not happen this afternoon. Well, then that is something we have to look at, because we're not always able to be responsive to Twitter in any given hour. People may be otherwise occupied, but there should be an alert coming out of the RCC at that time.
Absolutely. And I just want to be clear, that's just an example. This happens 24/7.
Sure, and that's why we're ramping up on the resources, because in many ways the customers are ahead of us, have been ahead of us on the electronic side, and we need to meet you and them where they are.
Well, and quite frankly, you have competition now. Some other folks are filling that void, and it would be great if Metro would step up and fill that void instead.
I think that, you know, Metro's come a long way, but do we have ways to improve and room to go and more resources to apply? Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mrs. Manders and then Will.
That's working for a very old institution. I thought I understand that you take time to make these changes and coming online, and your last comment about writers would have to maybe like years ahead of where Metro was going to be in terms of that responsiveness. And I do think it's mindful for us to be cognizant that we're talking about a major service disruption where you're getting 100 tweets at one place and only one person responding to it. The idea of getting responses to each of those situations are a little bit difficult. And so I think it's just being mindful of the technology. What I would like to see, some of the question is, as this plan is unfolding for the customer call center, is if you can come back to the maybe in August or September and outline for us, like, what is it going to be, what is it going to look like, what are the numbers going to be designated, hashtags that the Metro is going to put out there and advertise that if you have a question, this is the one to use, and sort of ways in which people can feel educated and prepared to sort of engage with that social media presence in the proper way rather than venting to each other and creating that kind of atmosphere.
I really appreciate those insights, and I think you make a really good point. One of the challenges that we have is that we have many, many channels of information, but people don't always take advantage of them. So one of the questions is, how do you advertise it? How do you publicize it? How do you make sure that people know it's available? And I really appreciate the Rob's input in thinking about, as users, you know, where do you think the best opportunities are to do that?
I want to check in as to where you are. We plan for here to talk about the direct work plan. We have some associated questions. Because I know you have to leave it.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, a question from Will, and maybe we can get a little bit more traction.
This is Joseph Quick. Because of the fact that we have all these challenges with people being notified through whatever method, whether social media, by phone, through customer call center, about interactions that happen throughout the system, whether it's bus or rail, how are those things reported back to someone towards the customer care center so they know that those things are occurring? I mean, do the bus drivers contact somebody and then that message is forwarded on so they get to customer care, or something happens in the rail system that someone at some point say, all right, maybe we need to let someone know that this incident has occurred, so that way, when people are calling in wondering, where's my bus, or what's going on with the train line, is there a system in place where that information is relayed, as soon as possible?
Yeah, so I guess there's a couple of different methods. So we have bus ETA now, which formerly was known as Next Bus, and it's an upgrade from Next Bus. I hope you think it's an upgrade from Next Bus. I don't see some head shaking. I know it's having some braking issues, but hopefully we will get that down. So that's an electronic method. We also do have an old school method where a bus operator says, I want a detour, and they may radio bus operations control center, bus operations control. We have communicators in bus operations control. They will put out an alert saying there's a detour, and they alert it from the operator through old school radio. It probably takes a couple minutes longer. But since we put communicators in the bus operations control center, I think we've had some pretty good real-time information sharing with bus customers.
Yeah, I'm thinking that in relation to what Chris is saying, no one sent any information on social media as far as saying that, okay, here's the problem, we've got to relay that. It didn't really have to be extended. So if someone is passing information on to here, then that way that would be a little concern. I know it works with the new system, I'm sure a lot of that will be taken care of. But my concern was, well, all the channels, flowing properly, or someone, not necessarily intentionally dropping the call, but, saying that, let me call in, let this someone know that this is going on. So that way, when people are, frantic, they can get an answer.
I think that is always the challenge, to make sure that information flow is happening seamlessly, something that obviously we have an opportunity to get better. In the interest of time, I'm going to flip through this. So, permits, projects, and planning, I have less to tell you about. That we are working with the developer community to improve our real-time data, and we made some commitments about that coming forward this summer. The RAC had something about feedback on 7,000 series and giving recommendations into 8,000 series cars. I think there's plenty of time to do that. I don't think we're moving forward on the 8,000s in a way that means that you have to do that right away. And the NET pilot, obviously, that we terminated the contract in December under that pilot, and instead we're doing basically a rehabilitation of the current machines, maybe some improvements in the games. And that's being scoped now. So there's not a lot of detail to provide to you on that, but I'm sure when we do, it'll be forthcoming, and we'll seek feedback from the RAC and amplify it if you have a chance. Keep going.
Could you just clarify on that, in that because there were some things that were tied together with that, and certain new kinds of fare and gates and. I think when I heard that it's canceled, I don't know what's going to continue and what's going to
we're going to fix the system that we have and improve it. We're not going to have the fair meeting, you're not going to use your Apple Watch, we're not going to do
it. We have everything, that's just, okay.
That's right. Although, they tell me you might want to be able to use your Apple Watch. On the leadership front, I know that one of the things that the RAC advised was to get one just from Amazon. I'll give you an example of that. So after the blizzard, Barbara actually mentioned to me that we ought to ask Amplify how well the communications were received about the blizzard. And so we did that, and we got a lot of great feedback, so we really appreciate those very specific suggestions of ways to tap into customers. The website enhancement, we are hopefully coming out in the next month or two with a refreshed website. That's underway. We've taken a lot of the suggestions from this group about that have been given to me and others over the last year about functionality. Of course, the fight for home page real estate is always pretty ferocious. If you ever had that experience where you work in any other place, everybody wants to be home page, so you make some judgments there, but hopefully we can come back and share that with you this summer. And I know you have an objective about participation and retention. That's maybe less something I can comment on, so let's go to the next slide. This is something that you guys had on your work plan with respect to candidate process improvement. And the last slide is what I'm going to spend the remainder of my time on. When Barbara and I chatted, we talked about next steps on the work plan. And as I read your governance piece, it said to respond to any suggestions from the board. And I came to the meeting where our new board chairman, Jack Evans, came and spoke to the group. And as I recall, he asked the group for one thing.
And it's honorable plan now.
That's great. So it is about, you know, communicating the needs that the riders need for funding for Metro. And so I just want to offer that if you need help from our government affairs staff to understand the legislative process and what maybe, not language specifically, but maybe what where they are in the process and where your letter, your comments might do most good, we can make sure that, to provide you with that support from the staff side. Also, I'm guessing at least two people at the table here have been monitoring Twitter in the last hour and know that we are imminently coming out with a draft plan. The general manager is putting the finishing touches on it and will be announcing that in the coming days. And there is a very robust public information plan associated with the impacts to service that plan will have, and so we will very much look forward to your input and feedback about that as soon as we're able to share it. So what I'm going to do is ask Joy to make sure that that comes back to you all as soon as that's made public, so that you have a link, and anybody who needs a paper copy can have a paper copy, but we're going to be seeking a lot of feedback on that very, very soon. Fare structure simplification is something that every customer talks about with us. It's something I'm sure you all talk about amongst yourselves. We have probably the one of the most complicated fare structures in the history of the Western world here at Vermont, but it's based on, advanced algebra and other formulas. And I don't have anything specific to suggest to you, but I think that if the RAC wanted it, go down a path of thinking about here's a fair structure simplification recommendation that you could get consensus around. I think FY18, and you're being early enough in the process now, that it's something to start working on now so that you can be part of that dialogue. I'm not sure what it is. With all due respect to Mr. Nelson, it could be a pilot. Could be something that we try and test. It could be something that you want to see done permanently. It could be for some riders, not all. It can be anything that you want to do. But rather than asking a series of questions about the fares, I would really recommend that the RAC decide what they'd like to see and come forward with a recommendation instead of asking questions. It really is helpful for riders to give us their view of what would be beneficial to you instead of just...
If we may jump in with that, because it may tie into what we wanted as well. Then no.
What I could mention is a year ago we were tapping this when Jeremiah Bush was on the RAP, and he was, and I don't know if it was, some of it was a question. She was working a lot with Mark Schofield, but a lot of times it would be, here's an idea. And he had several ideas, but the committee came up with some of them. And they said, yeah, the number one might run into trouble on that is whether it's Title VI thing or whatever. So they were getting feedback about where that might hit some barriers that we can't get up. But I get your point. So start with what we think would be a good idea.
You can always test it with staff in terms of, is this feasible administratively? Can you make the fare machines do it? I mean, there's some like hard bumpers, right? Some hard stuff sort of bumpers that we may be able to give you some feedback about. But I know from the AAC's experience, sometimes you want to recommend something that staff may or may not even agree with, but you want to recommend it anyway, and that's okay. It's a way of setting a marker out there that says, hey, on principle, this is what the RAC thinks ought to be simple or different. And that's okay too. So however you want to proceed, we can answer questions or help you understand administrative difficulties, but that doesn't mean you should proceed on principle with what you believe is the right thing to do.
Right. And just as I mentioned earlier, we know to communicate back with the board on what we've taken to them as recommendations. We're trying to, I sent something to Jennifer and Melissa, and hopefully we will hear again as you were present in February when we just inquired about the social media recommendation that we've done just before the new year. Sorry, and they asked us to send it to them again because it was turnover, and then there's been the one constant person on the executive committee is not gone, or will be gone very soon, Mr. Dan. So we resubmitted it, but we don't know even what the take is on that. I know the Lord was encouraging, just wanted to talk about it because he knew there were a lot of reservations from the staff. So we've asked again, with them, what's next? Do you want to talk about it or what? Before we finish, I intended that, did you want to just talk for a second about Jason?
Sure, so when I introduced myself, I told you that my department is customer service communications and marketing, and so you know that Jason's been liaising with the group for the last 6 months, and he is, when he's not here, he's the director of customer research, a job which has become even more important as we have sought great, great, great rounds of public engagement in many, many, many topics through our public participation plan, as well as through Amplify, which we're very pleased has grown to more than 3,000 riders now, and hopefully continuing to grow. And we, and I know some of you may actually also be Amplify participants, which is terrific. It gives you two channels to get your ideas through. And we encourage that. And so Jason's obligations have grown, and it's been my judgment that I think that he needs to refocus his time on his day job. And so what I offered to Barbara is that I would replace him as the group's liaison to staff, and that I will attend. I'm not able to attend monthly meetings, but I will certainly at least commit to quarterly meetings, and I'll come to more as I can. But of course, Joy more works with me directly, and so you still have her support logistically, administratively, and to get information back and forth as that's needed. And hopefully, with my participation, we can advance the same agenda that you had and that Jason was supporting with.
Perhaps, I don't know, hopefully it ties in dovetails nicely because I seem to have been left out to dry, so go ahead, sir.
So I'd like to ask a question about the track plan first. Sure. Cece Goffer, new member. Very nice to meet you. With regards to the track plan, I can only imagine the enormous public response, right, to that issue. And I guess I want get their sense of, firstly, what types of communication channels and communication plans do you have to make sure that all the information gets out there to providers about specific facts, you know, that are the requirement minutes, you know, what those hours are. And then more of a suggestion, if I may offer that, do you think it's realistic or feasible that call center staffing and social media staffing be increased for the period sort of directly after that plan is put out, so that the many questions that come through can be answered very promptly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the tactics that we're going to use to engage the public about the track plan are virtually everything you can imagine, right? So it's going to be everything from pop-ups and stations to hand out information, to website information, pushing things out through social media, paid advertising in the Post Express and online advertising opportunities, radio. We have a public participation plan that actually does require us to do these sort of things in more than 7 languages. So everything that we do then gets multiplied and done in those communities, and then there's special interest publications as well. We'll be doing a lot of public information campaigns, press releases, television appearances, that kind of thing. We'll be briefing stakeholders, we'll be having open houses for business leaders. So I think that there's probably not a communications channel that you can think of that won't have outreach about this plan.
I understand you had to get out here. Do you have time for one, or do you have to split right now?
I can take one last question.
Just very quick, related to the previous discussion about also a new member. And I would observe on the announcement when WMATA was going to close, I walked through my metro station at Federal Center Southwest, and I saw the manager, station manager, and I said, "So glad to hear you're closing tomorrow. What you gonna do?" And he said, "I have no idea. I knew that we were closed because a customer told me that's gonna happen." So I would hope that in your follow-up that using your station managers and other employees and keeping them informed about what's happening will help them also spread the word for you.
So, thank you, and that is very important. In the last instance, we made that decision and announced it in the same hour. And obviously, we worked very quickly to give our riding public as much time as possible. And the employees got all on board in time. In this time around, we are trying to make sure that the public has as much notice as possible so that we're in place, and it's not something that's going to impact anybody tomorrow. You're going to have weeks' notice, and in some instances, months before it affects your line. And so I think that we will have a better informed workforce this time, and station managers in particular have a tool in their kiosks. They have a computer, and they have update mechanism, we call it Station Manager Direct. And when we need to hit all of them with some news pretty quickly, we put it out on Station Manager Direct, and in their kiosk they get that information. So I commit to you that this information will be out on Station Manager Direct, and hopefully they'll read it before you run into it. Although if they're out of their kiosk calling the customers, that's not bad either. Well, thank you again for the time that you've given me.
Thank you so much for coming. Excellent. Really appreciate it.
It's time for our public comment period. How many do we have, Joy?
One public commenter, Mr. Kevin Combs.
So I'm here to talk about Select Pass, and I came to one of the meetings in March to talk about this same issue. I have a few of these. Number one thing I want to say off of that is I used it in April, and look, I actually saved in the spreadsheet $63. Taking up your call, right? 43% for me. So it's been good. However, because of where I work for, they use a benefit system that does not offer passes. So I would say subtract 30%. out of that savings because I had to buy it with my own credit card. Our employer uses an external system called Payflex, which in turn embeds a system called WireCommute. And I've been reaching out to those companies in like every channel possible. And I finally got some news that as of next week, they're going to support passes. But I think, you know, not every other company that does this kind of benefit is going to have someone like me counting them about supporting passes. And I really think there's opportunity for Metro to simplify the process of getting passes with benefits. So right now it's very convoluted. They say you're going to direct some dollars into your account for passes and then separately purchase the pass after the dollars come into your account. And from what I'm hearing back from WireCommute, they've actually come up with a separate solution. I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's available to the other providers. And I've also tried to get in touch with the Smart Benefits team, and I got no response from them.
Here at Metro?
Yes.
If you have something you'd like to give to them, I can give it to them. You can tell me. You can leave information with John.
I'll
get
it right up for you.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, we are going to talk a little more about FlexPass. That doesn't happen yet. But thank you for the good news and the bad. We appreciate your providing feedback.
I think it's key that as many people as possible be able to purchase this with benefits, especially since it is DC law. If you have a company in DC with more than 20 employees, those employees are entitled to benefits, but not specifically a lot of
the
passes.
Yeah. Well, and that's an interesting thing because Lamar knows all of the administrators at the employers who set up things, but when it's a third party, I'm not sure what happened. And I haven't had a third party wage works where I used to be. Could be because these other people are actually tapping into a lot of systems. It's capable of doing it, but I didn't think about third
party. I mean, I think the third party should be priority, because I know just in the case of Accenture, where I work, that's 6,000 DC-based employees. So that's 6,000.
And I just don't know if the work is on the part of them or on the part of us.
Obviously,
I don't know.
There's work from both.
Question. Thank you. Colin, please.
Well, I just want to say that this is certainly a priority for my committee, and you know, we have continued to ask questions and recommend to the Lamada staff that they be working as hard as possible to resolve these issues related to employer benefits. And I myself mentioned like that to my employer during an open enrollment period, and they have, you know, no idea about it or how it even implemented to our first party system. So I think there's a lot of work to be done to make this successful, and we'll continue to push on it.
Thank you.
We have no more public comments.
Right. What we did have in the last month is four comments that came in from the public deity. And Joy forwarded them to me. And they also, if appropriate, they were the information was forwarded to customer care people because it's, in some cases there are specifics involved that they would not follow up on. And I have no idea what's going wrong with my voice tonight. Anyway, I'm just going to summarize what they were. The first one came in it was in that short period of time where the chairman of the board had said, yeah, we might sort of shut down for a long time. And when the general manager said, we're not considering long-term shutdown. So anyway, somebody that gave a lot of thought, a lot of careful thought, and some good ideas to if it were going to do a very long shutdown, some guidelines and some pointers about do this and do that. It was very well written, and I complimented her and was about to pass it on to some people in addition to customer care, and then the announcement came out. And so I'm glad that they aren't going to need that right now. The second one was somebody who takes the green line and commented that as they go toward Branch Avenue on the evening commute, it's very crowded and it's very unruly. Interestingly, I checked the statistics. The Golf Common was about that crowding, and green was one of the lowest in terms of statistics that we have.
What kind of statistics?
Friday, number of, yeah, car, yeah. And, but that doesn't mean she was a heavy crash. I mean, I just don't know, average test on top of everything. Anyway, and interestingly, the next one was generic, she didn't say what train, but a complaint also of people with lots of eating, drinking, etc., all the things you're not supposed to do, including playing loud music. And it did occur to me, the challenge. I know I've heard people before here and elsewhere say that that they're seeing, are we even enforcing the eating, no eating rules? And I can just picture right now if we did. I wonder, I'm not saying this is a statement of what we should do, but I just wonder how the customers would react. Would the answer be, why aren't you getting the guys for stabbing people? Why aren't you, and you're telling this guy that he's got coke that's open on the, I don't know. But it's a challenge because it is happening. Anyway, the fourth one was a very specific situation with a restaurant owner on Georgia Avenue. And apparently in the last several months, for some reason, the bus stop moved the location, and it's right outside our restaurant now, and it's a narrow sidewalk, and there's no place for people to wait. She mostly, her initial conveying of concern was that her restaurant people could hear, her customers could hear every announcement that's done on the bus, all the noise, and it was very, very disruptive. But she also said it was not good for the riders because there's a lot of them that weren't there and they're not really placed for them. But I know that the bus people recently heard how to routinely examine things like that and make sure that they would get the information. So those are the things that came in. I anxiously await the next round that Joel will send me. Because I work very hard to be tactful and appreciate it that they sent this, but I don't always have, you know perfect answers. That's it on the customer.
And with that, we are only 1 minute behind schedule. I'm sorry.
Is it possible to forward those emails to all of us just so we get, or not? I'm just wondering, just so that we get a better sense of what the writers.
I don't have any problem sharing them. I think at one time I heard there was a concern about sharing identification and everything. So I could certainly share the content. There's no problem with that at all. I will do that. So I mean, is that something you guys in general want? I see some smiles like, I don't want to see it.
another quick question. Say we want to spread the word about this through email. For folks to send in comments and complaints. What is the email address again that people should write to?
RAC comments. RAC comments.
Okay.
At WMATA.
No worries. I think Barbara's got a thing on circulation. I'll forward you.
Oh, yeah. No, I will do that. Not sure. Yeah, RAC comments at WMATA.com.
Okay. Next on our agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. Also, I'm maintaining the spreadsheet, so I don't know if, sending that out, maintaining, but that's a tool that I'm also using to track. So that is something, if you don't want to get into the onesies.
But you haven't had any more for me in a while.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but, I check the data.
Yeah. And she's got them. I'm sure she's had some emails, just not emails that anybody wants to share with anybody because they're spam and you can imagine.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. The March 2nd and April 6th meeting minutes have been distributed. I don't think you had any comments on those. Yeah. All right.
I did want to thank Joey for updating the March minutes based on that feedback.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I took that feedback and
we'll
see
you
in April.
Thank you. I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes.
So move.
Second.
Second.
Chair reports for April. I'm sorry. That's right. We had forum. That's right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All not in favor? Any abstentions? I need a motion passes. Chair's report for April.
Yeah, that's me. So in the packet, I'm assuming it's there, it usually is. Yeah, like the last, it does have the monthly report. For those of you who are new, I do a written report to the board every month, and it goes in the packet for the board meeting. It's toward the end of the month. And then at that board meeting, I also speak to the board, as does Patrick every month. Usually Patrick, sometimes something else for him, but, and usually the report is the basis for the speech, unless there's been something that happened more recently, maybe that didn't come in time for the cutoff of the report. Anyway, so I'll let you read that. So when I do go to the board sessions, there were just a couple of things I wanted to comment on that came out of the committee meetings of the board in April. In the finance meeting, when they were going through some things, there was, it was an interesting thing, the announcement about the cancellation of NEP, a new electronic payment program. That came out just after the board meeting, but at the board meeting, they talked about it was still going to be advanced. But they had been told by the FTA that federally funded, there's a lot of money for federally funded projects, but the automated NEP was not one that could be covered by it because it wasn't safety specific. And so if we wanted to continue with that and station rehabilitation, which was also deemed not to be safety specific, that would have to be covered by other sources, not the federal sources. Also at the customer meeting that day, we talked about station names. Now, when I first heard there was a proposal, maybe many of you know, maybe not, that they wanted to add to Smithsonian, they wanted to say National Mall, and on the Foggy Bottom wanted to add Kennedy Center. And I think some of the reaction was, oh, we have our important things to deal with. So I thought that's what I think about. Anyway, I will say, after sitting and listening to the argument in favor of those, it really was very, very persuasive. For one, in both cases, the Kennedy Center and the National Parks are going to fund any changes to the signs that's responsible. Those changes are responsible for. And they talked about, you know, that how many millions of customers, you know, look at those signs over a period of time. I mean, how many glances at the sign and how many people looking on that saying, well, gee, which one is for the mall, which one's the Kennedy Center. I think, anyway, there was a National Park Service rep there to talk about the National Mall. And for the Kennedy Center, there were two members of the Kennedy family. And I have to say, we'll give away some secrets. I try not to give away, but other than being in the same room with John Kennedy when he was running for president, that's the last time I was in a place with Kennedy. And I don't know.
What? Ted Cruz's father was the same one that we have.
It was when he was campaigning. It was all fine. Anyway, they're really persuasive. And as a matter of fact, the staff recommendation to the customer committee was only to do one of those two, not both of them. I'm trying to remember which one was favored and which one wasn't. But the board said they wanted to do both. And especially in OTC, this is the nation's performing arts center. And for one, I don't think that the Kennedy Center is that close. And apparently that is one of the big misconceptions, is that there are actually guidelines on what you can put on the station signs and like how close something has to be in order to qualify beyond the name. And Kennedy Center set the rule. I think the rule is half a mile. And
because to me it's always such an awkward move, and if they're just three to diagonals and whatever, I don't think of it as being that close. But it is, and they're trying not to have make everybody park or park on the streets, which makes neighborhoods angry and get more people there. So that's what happened at that meeting. And the last one was at the board meeting itself, there often is a thank you to an employee for something special. And I know we are always experiencing and hearing about bad things, you know, bad behavior by employees. And they had a woman who was a station, no, rail operator at the McPherson station. And I don't know all the circumstances, but there a man had accidentally fallen into the track bed. And she got him out of there, and she got everybody notified that needed to be notified to do something different, and she notified the customers around. And so it's a kind of behavior that is really highly regarded. So that's it on my part.
The RAC committee reports?
Oh,
okay.
I'll
let you go
first.
Okay. Yeah, how about that?
Customer.
Okay, customer service
committee. We don't have to talk about everything you discussed. Is there anything really noteworthy we all ought to know about?
Well, you know, one thing I did notice in question as I'm looking through the chart that you have here was that a lot of those things were addressed by them tonight. So it will be very interesting to see where, you know, they move forward into as far as addressing what, you know, our desired requests are. So I mean, kind of like, well, okay, here we are again. Well, let's just, you know, do a wait and see on those things because they do sound like they're at least making an attempt. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how those things turn out. So I'll do a to be determined, please stand by.
Oh, yeah, please go ahead.
So, especially, it's really the customer service over here. But it's about Metro's policy regarding offloading trains when people work at them. In terms, it's happened to me a couple of times, and it is something that does come across as extremely paternalistic to sort of tell, especially when it happens during rush hour in the morning, so if a door, someone is accidentally holding the door with their bag and stuff, that you'll offload the entire train and then move on to the next one. And so this wasn't really putting in like workplace things to change. We're trying to get a little bit more background in terms of how that policy developed and like why that practice is in place and if there are potentially other solutions, whether or not the train operator can communicate with the station manager to like get to the seventh car and talk that situation down there so you don't have to, you know, have two people who are floating trains waiting for the next train.
Right, so is that really necessary or is that a tool of the writer and it's punitive or?
Yeah.
What's the process?
Yeah, what's the process? What's the method behind it? And is there something that is a little bit more customer friendly and not paternalistic to sort of be like, you're all in the corner and also the train.
Thank you.
All right.
Any other
service committee.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking at my paper, not
really. I don't understand that. Well, we've never had this before.
I know.
Blame you.
Okay, we're going to go around this way.
I actually have a question for Barbara related to the name changes. Did I hear you correctly in saying that the proposed name change was Foggy Bottom Kennedy Center?
Well, it's not taking anything away. It's still Foggy Bottom GW.
Okay,
good.
I'm
sorry, yeah. And then if there's a, that's the primary, and then there's a secondary underneath. And that would be the Kennedy Center.
Okay.
Same thing national. It's Smithsonian and something.
Just Smithsonian. Just
Smithsonian. Okay. And then secondary is national.
That's what you're
Well, and I don't know for sure. Maybe it's on the first liner. It's, yeah.
didn't take away anything.
Gotcha. That's cool. Comment.
So I would say, in the parents, I think, you know, that's a legitimate issue, but probably before we go forth with adding that to the work plan and making recommendations, we should, you know, try to do some backlining as to whether or not there's a policy in place that sort of dictates how that plays out.
Definitely, I mean, we talked about when it's happening to you, it's very much reiterated that somebody has to get on the way, everybody has to unload, so.
Right, but I mean, I do think that in some cases, it's sort of, you know, the train operator being, you know, often. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, you should, you know, be diligent and kind of, you know, interact. You go to Barbara or.
Just ask the question, why is it? Why,
yeah.
Why is that? Why do we do that?
And then I will also say, you know, that reminds me, you know, as we're kind of thinking about things that the communities can work on as we knock things off of our plate. For those of you who aren't necessarily able to attend community meetings in person, it doesn't preclude you from being able to, you know, sort of start developing, you know, background materials, research, et cetera, that can be passed on to the committees so that they can kind of, you know, move that through the process. So it's just a thought there.
I thought it was interesting what you're talking about because I've had a very different experience. I've been on trains where they kept everybody on the train and for 10 minutes, well, you know, everybody go look at your doors. There's a red light above your door. And so the experience I've had is times when, you know, after 10 minutes, you should really get the, you know, people off that train or at least out of that car. I wonder if there might be different experiences with different drivers or different lines or something like that. And I also wonder with the newer cars, because it seems like it tends to happen with the older cars that have been, you know, abused a little bit.
Well, the way the policy has been directed over the radio is because the older cars are not elevator doors, and so they do not open when there's something preventing them from getting there. Well, like 7,000 series is, and so they would change that shouldn't be happening.
Okay, maybe you had some background on it.
The doors close automatically because if there were like elevators, everyone that walked up to it would just keep it open constantly, and the trains would not go on schedule. The reason they close is because they want to keep the trains on schedule. That's not a mechanism, it's not a policy, it's a mechanism of the train. So there's nothing you can do about that. You can't change that. You're not going to change it on the newer trains or the older trains. It's the mechanism of the train itself so that people don't sit there and just keep it open.
Right. So, and to refine the question, for my purposes, we're talking about where somebody bumps the door, messes up the process, and they kick everybody off. Is that necessary?
Yes. So okay. The question is, like, is it right. Necessary? And what's the reason why that's never the case that you tell an entire group of adults get off the train and wait until the next train comes up.
Okay, well, we'll I guess get some answers on that.
Our policy.
You know, act like adults.
All right, next up, PPP.
So I'll make it relatively brief. The long version, you can take a look at our notes on the website. But we did have a relatively lengthy discussion about the cancellation of the new electronic ticket pilot and sort of what the implications of that are. I think, you know, generally the consensus of our committee was that, you know, that's disappointing. You know, we understand that the pilot was sort of ill-conceived or ill-implemented, at least, and you know, that resources are certainly scarce right now, but that it may be short-sighted to cancel the development of an open payment pilot system, or open payment system, as you know, demand for such a product is likely only going to increase as we move forward. So Jim's definitely kind of looking at what other systems have implemented and various other things, maybe grabbing some background.
Okay,
thank you. Oh, Jim, thank you. I'm just thinking myself, he's involved in quiet tonight.
Well, I just got out of the comments that apparently this has become kind of a topic of interest in the transit industry in general, and that on April 11th, the American Public Transit Association had a national summit on fare collection and revenue management.
as well as the DOT's Volpe Center, or National Transportation Center anyway, their staff have been doing some work on this issue. But the thing that I guess occurred to me is that this whole issue of accepting electronic payment by credit card, smartphone, is a function or task common to all transit agencies. And so to me, it's also very silly that each transit agency is developing this capability, like refueling their vehicles. Everybody's supposed to be able to do this. And so, kind of, I guess, what I'm thinking anyway is that, you know, this is an initiative that perhaps, you know, the U.S. Department of Transportation should be taking the lead on, because these are the kinds of things that should be developed as a national standard.
Best practices.
Yeah.
I think the analogy came up in our meeting was sort of proprietary electronic health records and meaningful use, that sort of thing.
So anyway, that's kind of the direction of the thinking, is that to have each transit agency literally spending millions and millions of dollars to develop the same capability that all of them need to have is silly. A waste of resources when you shouldn't have to reinvent this every time for every agency.
Thank you. Barbara?
Okay, leadership and the budget. I want to start with the leadership and governance. One of the topics that the leadership team has discussed, and I'll just inform you of, is reviewing the calendar for this year and the scheduled times for our meeting. And because occasionally you might hear rumors that may or may not be true, we're planning on meeting every month this year. And in July, that means, since the 4th of July is a Monday this year, that will be the holiday. And I know historically lots of people do take vacations, and if you haven't planned your stuff yet, please note we will be meeting on the 6th of July, which is 2 days after the 4th of July. Hopefully that won't rule out a lot of you to get plans already made. Even though the board does not have meetings typically in August, we will. We tried 1 year without. Well, last year it was partly because of board meetings. It was more that this room was being remodeled, and they picked to August because that's when the board wasn't busy anyway. And so we didn't have a meeting last August, and I felt that it really, really inhibited progress and continuity. So we will be meeting on the 3rd of August, the regular first Wednesday time. And also point out September, again, we have a holiday, a Monday holiday. Monday the 5th is Labor Day, and we will be meeting 2 days after that on the 7th. So as you're doing your planning, keep that in mind. We do have those. And unless we hear outcry, even if we don't have a quorum, I would hate to see that happen. But you know, we don't always have lots of things being voted on in every minute's agenda. So. Any questions, comments on that?
I'm sorry, what was the July 6th one again? What meeting would that be? July 6th?
That's our normal meeting.
So is we going to have it the...
Yeah, we will have all of those months. We are not changing them. Those are the only meetings that were close to holidays, or in August case, it wasn't close to holidays. It was when the board doesn't mirror a few people in this room that know that. I would guess we wouldn't. Put an end to that.
Barbara, I already know that I'm going to be here. That's my mother's 80th birthday, and I plan to host a celebration that week for her.
You know, no true confession.
I guess that's a big deal.
No problem. No, that's fine. I'm just saying, please do not all schedule your vacations this week if you haven't already, and you don't have to. Okay, now, budget and finance. Mostly, the last budget meeting was having Sean Cannon and one of his people that works on the select pass come and present to us information about it. They gave a lot of background information about what led to it, what the research was, and things of that sort. But
Mostly they answered a ton of questions that we had. We also had their presentation. And so I wanted, and I did send something out about the Select Pass to all of you, oh, just a few days ago, I think. And I will be happy to try answering questions that you have, but what I want to just go through is just some of the basics from that. Is that if you, how many of you do have, you do a 4 to 5 days a week commute, round trip commute? You do that virtually every week.
On rail.
On rail, yes, rail. Rail. So we only have, there's only, raise your hands really high. Okay, so it's not, oh, and we have people out there, good. You know, so maybe there's 10, but it's not everybody. Okay, because if you are commuting, you know, 3 days a week because you work from home too, or if you, whatever, part-time, if you just, you know, whatever, if you, then it isn't probably for you. And the other thing, it's a very easy thing, if you pay $225 one way each way, almost everybody does, there would be very few of you that are anything less than that. One of the things you have to do, I didn't think to mention, is you do have to register your Smart Trip card. I don't know why anybody would not ever register their Smart Trip card, but it does happen. People don't. It's a very nice protection. If you've lost the card, you don't lose the funds if you have it registered. Now, even on the website, there's a mention of if there's two price points that are in the pilot, $225 and $375. Did I say that right? I think so. But you don't have to be spending that really to use this. If you're $250, if your most common ride that you do every day back and forth is $250, or let's just say it's $3. If you buy the $225 times 18 is the price, then as many days as you commute that $250 ride, you will only have to pay for that a quarter. Other than you have to pay that, you know, the fee associated with $2.25 times 18. And the same thing goes for any other fare. So it's like you don't have to hit those two numbers. You just pick the number that's below what you pay. If you do pay $4.50 every day each way, get the $3.75, and you'll just have that amount to pay each day out of your non-pass funds, pass funds, and your other funds. What was I going to say about that? But it also means if you do that, in case it hasn't hit home, is that if you do some other traveling that's either not peak, so it's not as expensive, or shorter trip, or if you want to just, on your way home on your $4.50 trip, you want to stop somewhere, and then you get back on and go again, you've got two short trips. Both of them will be included. So if you're somebody that only goes back and forth, you know, it's close to a break even of what you would pay if you only do it 18 times. But if you do commute 20 times a month or 22 times a month, or you do those other little weekend things or evening things, or stops on the way, you will save money on it. And I think that that's not as intuitive to most people. And the reason you do want to sign up for the automatic reload is that for those extra amounts, if you have bought the pass that covers anything to $225 and you do have a $3 trip, it would take $75 from your card, but if you run out of funds, well, it's just better not to run out of funds, but if you do, all it means is you'll get that exit fare. You have to go to the exit machine and put in the extra. And then the thing about benefits, I know I heard, they heard, that some employers don't seem to know about it, but they know who all of the customers are. I mean, they have administrators that they interact with. So either somebody didn't pay attention to what they were told, or maybe there's other people.
You mean you're referring to the
employer or the
employer? No, the
employer.
The administrator at the office.
They have reached out to every employer. It's not just who knows who. It's people that have signed up to be administrators on Metro Fair. So they have communicated with them. But they said, because they keep hearing, well, I talked to my employer and they didn't know about it, then provide the name of the employer, and you can submit it to Metro, or if you want to tell me, I'll pass it on. That Jean says, just tell them who it is, and they'll make sure they understand it, and they'll call them and do whatever. Sure.
Go ahead. I was wondering, is there a list of employers that have already, like a list where the public can see, oh, my employer is already bought into this? Like, is there a list of employers?
It's anybody that has smart benefits.
I think it would be helpful if the writers could see, oh, my employer already knows about this on the website. Like, oh, my employer is right there.
But are you if you're using smart benefits now, that's the list.
Yeah,
specifically for the select path.
There's no, it's not, they don't have to do something special. And as a matter of fact, you know, there are other passes out there. They're not widely used. But it's exactly the same way for the administrator to do the select pass as it is if you had one of those monthly passes or weekly passes or whatever.
I'm not sure if the public necessarily needs that, even though they might, they should maybe. But I don't know if enough people know about the select pass and all the intricacies of all the rules, or that is essentially the same if you're already
paying attention.
Yeah, it depends on, you know, I think the guy, like, the guy at my job, you know, he's, you know, in a closet somewhere, you gotta go find him, and he's growl something at you, so it's,
they don't keep him in a closet.
Yeah. Got a hole in it.
I'm going to move on.
I don't think you're getting kicked
out. I think for example, the benefits are the English, the weekend benefits that you get as well, which I think that's really important. It's helpful for people to know, like, you know, this year, or something else that's included in your overall package. That's a number based selling point for people, and you kind of get this additional space, even for whatever amount you cover, so if you do the 375.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the weekends or not, it's just trips, period.
Just trips.
No matter what time. But if you do travel on the weekends, then it's mostly not peak fare. And if you do travel in the middle of the day or in the evening or whatever, when it's mostly not peak fare, those are all going to be under, you know, the amount that you're paying.
I think what we're talking about is maybe if Metro develop a way in which departments or staff are visually talking about some sort of like sticker or approval to be like, we know how to like select, pass, certify, so they know this is a place in which they've had this experience before. It might be easier for those people to know that there's something in there, because it can be pretty daunting. So I don't know if we're like, if I mentioned has any concept of this, I don't know how I'm approaching with the person knowing this person can attest to being breached and familiar with how that process goes, so training for that they went through or something like that.
I think
this is employers on the website where the smart bus is, like, yeah.
I don't think that would be public.
I think it's going to be pretty common knowledge that to the employees, the other employees, and to everybody probably the administration of that. But if they, because again, it's not unique, but if it's a smaller employer, that's where I know I've heard things. Maybe there's one person, maybe there's, you know, 100 people in the company, and the person that's administering it now, they just took over for someone else and they didn't set it up and they really don't get it, you know, they don't really understand it. But if you just give those names or, you know, the company name, or can get the administrator to turn it in and let them, the experts, teach them about it so you don't feel like you have to.
So it might, you know, yeah, I made a joke a little bit earlier about my agency. I could make sure to do a better job of communication. Perhaps, who knew? I mean, what's the likelihood? But I am going to go nip at the heels of, you know, the guy that handles that at my job, because unless I prompt him, he's probably not going to do anything different because it's all set on me. Chris? I'm sorry.
That's okay. As we heard from Kevin earlier, it's not just as simple as my company is administrative or smart benefits, because that's not the only way to utilize pre-tax dollars for transit. And in fact, many employers utilize a third-party administrator. WageWorks is an example.
I need to ask that question back.
So the question, I think, is a bit more complicated, and it's what is being done to educate those either third-party administrators or employers who utilize a system that's not as straightforward as smart benefits. But even in the case of smart benefits, I think we've heard from other riders who are employees of the federal government, for example, their HR administrator has not enabled that pass option for whatever reason. So I think there's more education to be done. But I guess my suggestion is perhaps pass along the presentation that was given, I mean, there were slides, to the RAC, and perhaps we all had a chance to digest that. If we have additional questions, we can probably try to compile them. I'm trying to work through them all right now.
Yeah, you know, another thing is when I was looking around on the website, you know, just following the link about SmartPass, I was amazed. I just tried to take every task there was. There's a lot of stuff out there for the employers. And it's certainly, if you can give them the link to the place on the website, if you can get to that. And I think that, I mean, Sean and the others, it's not like they're putting their head in the sand and saying, there's no problem. They said, we keep hearing that, but like, you know, we told everybody and we've got all kinds of things. And so just, if there are still people that still say they don't, then tell me who they are and we'll take care of it. So, but I can find something really, especially like I said, if they have anybody that's on the pass, maybe a lot of employers don't.
Can I make a comment on that?
Oh, sure.
To your left.
To your left.
Probably even more important than the select benefit is the fact that recently the amount of subsidy was doubled. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons Metro has given time and time again for its problems is reduced revenue. And one of the major reasons Metro claims that revenue is reduced was because the SMART benefit a year or two ago was cut in half and people stopped using Metro. It seems to me, again, I could be wrong, there are a number of questions that everybody here has about how the SMART benefit program is working / select benefit. So I would suggest perhaps we would consider sometime in the next month or two for our meeting that we have the person who's in charge of this program come here.
Which program?
The SMART benefit program. Well, the SMART, I assume it's more or less administered by the... No? Oh, that's even...
What?
That's even...
I think this came out of the planning department, this specific project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I would... Anyway, we have someone or two people come talk to us about how their passes operate and are they making any progress in, and this is really what I'm concerned about, revenue. Are they making any progress in regaining that lost revenue now that we have, again, gone back to the previous level of federal subsidies for the SmartPass, because I would certainly be concerned if that wasn't happening. It's not going to happen overnight.
It's a good question, because we...
So I'm looking for, just as a suggestion, if we're looking for some speakers and some subjects, that might be of interest, maybe.
Okay.
But I'd also direct it to Colin, because he's chair of the committee that...
Well, actually, it's the budget committee.
Budget, excuse me.
We welcome anybody to involve in that.
I think it would just be helpful to see their presentation, maybe just send that around.
See their presentation that they give to employers?
The administration.
No, the one that they gave to the budget committee. Did they have slides?
Oh, yeah.
Send that around everyone.
I thought I did.
I don't think so.
The late pass?
Yeah.
Oh, that's online. I loaded it.
No, I sent it around with this email. It says attached is a presentation about select path made at the last REC budget meeting. It was an attachment to that email. Unless I just said attached and didn't attach it.
Can call me embarrassed.
No, I could have not done it. I've been known to do that before. At any rate, one of the things we didn't talk much about is that there are a lot of employers in this town or in this area where they do, maybe they don't give you free travel. Let's start with a lot of government employers where you get free transit if you sign up through the smart benefits. And if you, every month, if you have that situation, and every month you have extra money left over at the end of the month, then, you know, don't sign up for select pass. You know, that, there's no sense of that. But if you have, if they give you the full maximum now, 235, I think, and you do run out every month, then you can still get a little bit of the benefit. But there are other people, like with me, where I didn't get anything free, but I was allowed to put my money in pre-tax, which saves me a significant amount, saved me a lot. And so, at any rate, if you want to do something like that, you always have to look at your employer's deadline, because I was paid 15th of every month, and but the payroll cutoff was more like the 7th, so that I had to notify people by the 7th that I wanted to do this for the next month, so that it would get into that payroll to deduct it from my check, so that I think it would be active the next month. So you just have to be aware of what those things are. Oh, I need to stop.
I like to suggest that maybe we review whatever has been put out already about it, and then, you know, perhaps have a conversation at the job if necessary, then we can, you know, compile some questions as necessary. We have a little bit of time for announcements and roundtable, and so it's, first up, Chris, please.
The two things. First, I'm a little frustrated because we didn't have time to talk about literally the burning issue in the room, and that is the NTSB hearing yesterday and what came out of it and the challenges that face Metro. I'm still a little, I'll use the word appalled, that we don't really have a safety committee despite 43 recommendations coming out of the NTSB ranging all over the map, that we really should be having an input on, and we're not. And instead, we spent 30 minutes talking about select pass, which is my topic, but I'm just a little frustrated. The second thing I wanted to announce that the kind of cousin or sister group, the WMATA Writers Union, has been disbanded. I have taken that into receivership. So no members, no leaders, nobody right now. And I will be looking at launching that again at some point. Probably not with me in charge, who knows, but I didn't want to let it die, but I want to let you know that there is no writer's union right now.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to
put my name. Major?
I want to piggyback on what Chris just said. The two major issues for WMATA right now are safety and trains and fires and things like that, and security. We hear almost every day that there's someone has been stabbed. or something like that. This committee needs to have some representation for our riders. And I want to explore, I can't chair the committee, I will participate, but we need someone to step up and set up a committee for that. And do it outside of the chairman, I understand, but I think it's very important that this group in particular represents the riders with the two major issues that are hitting Wuhan right now. So, Tim, please just look inside your calendars and such and get back with Barbara. Let's set this up. I'll participate 100%.
I'm sorry, I missed part of that. Was that about safety?
Safety and security, yes.
Yeah, I just to clarify, I'm not standing in the way. We tried to have one, and then the people on the first night got together, and there was not enough people, and one of the people left, and they weren't able to get together on the time. I said, if that changes at any time, just tell us. But we have to. And the leadership has to set it up, but that doesn't mean you're unwilling to do that. So I'm happy to do that. We just, so it's been considered as part of customer service because that way they reach out for them. I'd ask Will to always have time set aside on the agenda, specifically on that topic. And Christine, I know, would love to be a part of that. She just couldn't be. She's doing a lot of traveling right now. And Christine Madden, our new member, who's very safety oriented. So, in case you're gathering with her, some reason don't want to have it, that is not true. Just somebody needs to, we need a critical mass.
All right. Yeah, I mean,
I have a motion to create a saving committee that lets up the beginning time to start after the customer service one. Because I do, for example, I like the fact that the budget planning committee that happens before the customer service one is because of the connection that we kind of naturally connected with safety security being part of the customer service. Could we set up, not necessarily for timing as a chairperson, but at least a dedicated specific committee to get the motion going that will happen after the formal of the customer service meeting on next Thursday?
Second.
Any, so wait a second.
I think everyone around this table, and I believe in my heart, many, many people at Wuhan are very interested in safety. If we're committed to do this, then there needs to be a chairman, and people need to sign up. And we have limitations, just like the MOTA has limitations. We can't have a committee that no one's in charge of, that floats around, and I can't imagine how things would happen. So if we have something like this, if we have a motion to have a committee, then we have some people that are willing to stand up and do it. And we have limited resources. You may say that we don't have resources to do that, but I'd encourage us to have a chair and to have people sign up.
My comment is that you can ask a motion that you support the idea. I can create it by myself. It doesn't need any. I'm happy to say here, okay, who's going to serve on this committee? Do we have? Raise your hand if you plan on serving on this committee. Okay. Well, you know, we got a lot of people. The last time we did that, we didn't. Okay. So
that's why I put this up. So
yeah, you can. I hereby announce that I'm establishing an Iraq safety committee. No problem.
That
generally speaking, the committee then we'll get together, and if you want to all turn your names, say your names going around the room, and that you'll need to assemble, whether it's generally in person, but can be the start of it. You can talk about who you want to have as your chair and who's going to take the notes and when you're going to meet. Same thing we did at the start of the year, but some of you weren't here. Several of you weren't. So we have Sherry, and we have Lisa, and
Jeff. Do we have somebody else over here though? We got all the new, brand new guys.
Did you say those names for the record? Because none of you.
It's first of all, it's all five of the new people.
Okay.
Yeah. The, not new this year, the ones that just started last month. It's all five. Because Christine is not here, but and it's also major. Was there anybody else over here? Okay.
Did you get Joseph? Because that's on his hand.
Yeah, I did. So, I, and, let's see, we have, who else, is it Sherry, is the...
Who's missing? Is it Christine?
Christine, she's, I'm going to, do any of you want to volunteer to just call the first gathering so you can get started? You want to do it, Sherry?
Yes, that would be fine, but that wasn't my question. It was something that, Sorry, Sherry. This is where we ran into the issue before, because more people were willing and we saw the importance of having the safety committee, but we never got the math question about turning in which days the most people would be available. So since it never went out, we all didn't know when to coordinate, when it would have the greatest amount of participants.
When what didn't go out?
The question
sent out,
what day is most feasible for each person who's willing to commit.
So the committee never sent that?
Right. So since we didn't ever have the, I guess, the question come out, we never were able to get a number of people compiled together to say, well, the greatest amount of participants selected this day. The secondary suggested day of the amount of the number of people was. So even though there might have been conflicted.
Yeah, because it's just you guys.
Because there's so many.
It's not like something.
Okay,
if you do that, you know that I can tell you what you need to know if you don't know where all the addresses are and everything. But, okay.
All right. We're just about the time of the game.
Just wanted to make an observation given the past conversation that to me, safety actually has two different aspects here, and maybe I shouldn't confuse them, but one is public safety and some of the crime aspects that people are concerned about. The other side is the sort of personal safety when the place is burning down and we don't have working fire extinguishers, which is more kind of a technical concern, I think, in terms of the organization's operations. I don't know if people want to.
Generally, yeah, I think here we're usually referred to as safety and security.
Right.
Imagine.
But the existing board was that.
The new one, do you mean?
Yes.
The new, that just changed.
Yes, I believe they do still have a safety and security subcommittee. I'm saying there's two different sets of problems and solutions.
Yeah, right.
Right. It's categories. And so rather than sort of possibly sort of confusing the two or something that makes a distinction here or whatever. I think there are people with concerns about crime. There are
so as when that committee gets together, we can discuss that. What your intent
is.
I have one other question. Just in relationship to safety, is anybody interested at all? I have one more suggestion about having the National Transportation Safety Board come and discuss their report that they issued yesterday to us.
Okay, so
the Severe Learning Disabilities Committee.
Yeah.
Okay, do we make a motion for that, or is that just
going to
happen? Are you convinced?
Yes, we have a motion of adjourn the meeting.
Second. Third.
We're adjourned.
Can we be looking out for like a scheduling of the time at the meeting?
What is our objective? Is it stuff that's going to read in the...
I'm happy to help it, like, I've done a lot.
Checkers, the same thing. Any presentation we have from the potential employees?
Okay. Typically, so that we can make a recommendation.
We could make presentations on social. We could say, based on the presentation of NPSB, we think this is the priority of the recommendation.
Yes,
severe.
Wait. But remember, that was a year and 4 months ago. They're all the players.
The system is broken. Right. You don't think the system is broken?
It did.
But they're, okay.
I just asked the question if people were interested.
Yeah, they're interested.
They're interested, okay? Yeah. So, you know, I can't say what people are doing. It doesn't hurt. And if they're interested in it, and NTSD will come and speak to us, why shouldn't we? Okay. I mean, if they're interested in the man in the moon coming and speaking to us, because they think, you know, the rotation of the moon around Earth, significant development. We're sitting here listening to Linda Mosley. She's defending the system.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
The defender of the system, the defender of the state system. These people are part of the system. No, they don't do decent justice. The defenders of the system. I don't have to react when I have something to do.